Welcome, nerds and geeks and fans from a galaxy far, far away and a time not so long ago. This is your co-host, Chris Negline, hanging out with my other two hosts.
I'm Brian.
I'm Cam.
This is going to be podcast 132, where we're going to talk about what's new and what's old in Star Wars. How's it going to be old style and how's it going to be new style? First, let's get into the Geekly Weekly, Weekly Geekly. So what's going on with you, Brian?
I hate to admit it, but I am a fan of Lolcats. I mention this all the time. I was a pretty early adapter to the internet, and Lolcats were pretty much 60% of the internet when I was on it first. I love them. I'm into them. And I'm very interested in, now that they've become popular, where they're going. So I watched Grumpy Cat's worst Thanksgiving special ever. Did either of you guys catch that?
No. Tell us the darkness of Grumpy Cat.
Yeah, I missed that one as well. How was it?
Ah, wow. It made me not like Lolcats anymore.
Wow, that bad, huh?
I've never been a huge fan of memes because of the people who use them. I don't think holding up a meme sign is a great way to communicate with someone.
I've always used that as kind of like more of a sarcastic comeback to something.
There's a lot of people who don't get it, and they just have conversations. I've called it before on the show. I think we're going to have like people researching memes in the future, like hieroglyphs.
In a distant, distant future, they're going to look back and see Grumpy Cat and be like, well, this is what they... That's pretty funny.
Sad, but probably true.
They're a part of communication, and they're used for total communication, and drives me nuts. But this one in particular... Oh my God, it's so painful to see people who don't know what a meme is use them.
Well, how would you translate a meme into a show anyway? The commercials I saw for it basically made the memeing kind of like basically be the voiceover for the cat, right?
Right. Well, it's a girl, so we shouldn't say him anymore. I had no idea Grumpy Cat was a female. But
I didn't either. Wow, that's good to know.
But they had this like rosy, kind of cheerful mom voice for her. I really hate things. Oh my gosh. And it was just so not convincing. She was the least grumpy cat I've ever imagined.
Yeah, I don't see. I would always imagine to be kind of a male grumpy voice, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad I didn't watch that because that would have just killed it for me. I mean, I like Grumpy Cat because he's grumpy and pissed off at everything. I don't want to hear him with a cheery, rainbow bright voice.
The whole story, like, he tried to be grumpy, but the whole story was, like, he was this little girl's only friend, and she was the only one that could hear her talk. She was kind of grumpy, but, God, Grumpy Cat memes, they're just all miserable.
I guess it's another case of Hollywood getting involved and trying to cater to a specific demographic. Did it seem like it was more geared towards kids? Because I feel like everyone that knows about Grumpy Cat is... not a kid, so did it seem like they were trying to make it into a kid show, or were they trying to market it to adults?
I think it was aimed at, like, tweens. Like, it was on Hallmark or Family or something like that.
Well, that answers that right there.
Yeah, that's yeah.
It was on the channel they would only be watching because they were forced to with their family. And I think they were trying to say, like, look, we get you. See how cool we are now that you're growing up and moving on? But, oh my God, they just so did not. And one thing they did that I've never seen before, it's okay to break the fourth wall. They broke the fourth wall to advertise. Like, during the suspenseful moments, Grumpy Cat would just come on board like, oh, I'm scared. Let's go to my website to relax for a few seconds.
Wow. That sounds like a butchering.
It was horrible.
You know, you bring up an interesting point, too, I guess. You know, I don't mind that when it's, like, on Cartoon Network or Adult Swim or one of those kind of things where they're doing it tongue-in-cheek, but... sounds like if they were serious about that, that's pretty bad.
And here's the sad thing is we've had grumpy cats in children's literature and entertainment before. I mean, Eeyore from Winnie the Pooh.
Right.
You know, Lucy from Charlie Brown. So we can have grumpy characters that don't have to be all kind of sounding so happy.
Well, I mean, the great thing about Grumpy Cat is that, I mean, even more so than Eeyore and those other characters, I mean, he had physical and mental animosity against everyone else, you know? Like, I want you guys all to die. And that was what made him so funny to me. But, you know, sounds like they sort of drained that out of the character. And to boot, who even owns Grumpy Cat? I'm wondering, like, who owns the license to – is it the person that owned the cat that took the picture and put it on the web? I'm really interested in following up and seeing what you know what those issues look like.
I think the family that owns the pet has totally monetized the cat. Would you think if the cat was a child, this would just be just totally beyond the line?
Right. But I mean, once you put the picture out there, I mean, you know, all those memes aren't coming from the same family, I'm sure.
Well, that just becomes free advertising for the family then.
Yeah, yeah.
They're in a gold mine.
Let's hope they made a mint off this special, because I don't know if they're going to get a second one.
Yeah, hopefully they cashed in when they could.
That's probably why they did it then.
Yeah. What else were you up to, Brian?
As you two know, I had a new board gaming experience. Our usual Thursday thing was canceled because of Thanksgiving, but we showed up Friday night at AGS and played the Game of Thrones board game for the first time. Well, my first time.
My first time as well. Chris was the you sort of walked us through it.
Yeah, I did. I own the copy, though the store had a demo copy. And I was one of those things where I, you know, wanted to blow the dust off the box and give it a try and see if it kind of matched up to my expectations. Because at one point, when it first came out in the first edition, we were playing it every week. It had even bumped off some of the wargamers who just were like very religious about doing their war games. They were like sitting over here and playing this board game for a while.
Yeah, and I'm glad you did, because I really enjoyed that game. I mean, aside from the fact that I won, so that was that's always fun. But I really enjoyed that game, and that's something I think we're definitely going to need to incorporate into our Thursday night gaming and, you know, whenever we get together.
Rematch, buddy. Rematch.
That was a lot of fun.
Brian, you should have beat me. It just so happened that we tied, actually, in the tiebreaker. The one tiebreaker out of the five that was the first one was the only one I think I beat you, and you smoked me in the rest of them. But, yeah, I think it's pretty much a draw, and we're going to have to play again and see who comes out on top.
I'm looking forward to it. For those who were listening who might have played the game, the second edition that we were playing has kind of killed some of the fun for it because they made some changes from the original first edition and the first expansion. Basically, what we did for a house rule was, unless you have six people playing, all those additional territories that are included in the base set just don't exist. You just leave that area of the map barren and nobody touches it, and that puts it back to the first edition feel of it being a political knife fight as compared to Risk.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, that's because anyone who just controlled the southern territories of the Westeros map could just sort of hang out there and basically control the game while everyone else was stuck in the middle of the board fighting it out with each other, right?
Exactly. In the second edition, they tried to add a thing where these territories that don't exist until there's a sixth player do exist, and they are territories you can gain. So, like you said, the guys in the south end can just kind of goof off on those territories, collect a lot of extra armies, and by the time anyone can deal with them, they've already amassed a ton of stuff.
Those Dornish fiends.
Yes, yes. Well, well there's a lack of the Dornish fiends. If we have the Dornish fiends in the game, then it goes right back to being a very tight game.
Right. Well, I mean, I was getting it from all sides. I was, you know, House Lannister, and I was stuck right in the middle of the board. And I mean, it was, when you say it's a political knife fight, I mean, it's, you aren't joking. I mean, that was, I couldn't defend fast enough. There were so many people coming at me in the middle of the board, but somehow I was able to, you know, pull off a few victories.
And no offense to Brian, but I think if I had kind of wrapped my head around some of the rules that I had forgotten and started using them earlier and using those tactics, I think I would have given Brian more of a go up there at the north. You were sitting up there collecting way too much power.
I did not expect the boats to be that powerful. That was, I mean, I was counting on you fielding like two or three pieces tops, not just being able to shuttle them over like that. That was definitely a shock.
Well, you know, and the thing is with those boats is that's why we have the ports in there now, because you have to attack the port in order to hit that territory on the land first, because they used to be much more powerful. And that was kind of the key to the game. Now it's kind of put it to more of being a mix.
You used it where there wasn't even a port. You weren't going for a city. You were just shoveling them on ground.
Exactly, because I didn't want to go for your little castle that had the port.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's why they have the ports there, so you just can't walk over to somebody's capital and claim it.
You know, the boats also seemed a pretty good counterbalance to the fact that, you know, Brian, you were the Starks and you were up in the north, and you really sort of went unchallenged as to your territory, except for you would have, I guess, gone otherwise unchallenged in your basic territory if it weren't for the boats. And Chris, making forays up there and trying to take over some of your territory. Otherwise, you would have just been able to sort of hang out there and increase your reach down south.
I'd love to see the unhouse-ruled Sutherlands, because it sounds like exactly what happened in the north.
Right.
Like, there was a lot of room up there just for me.
Well, that, like I said, between, you know, the Greyjoys being novice and being kind of new to the game and not being as – well, they were kind – you two made an alliance, which was great. But if I had been more aggressive, I think you wouldn't have felt so, you know, lonely up there. Six players would solve the problem immediately, because then we would all be busy and on top of each other.
Well, the Greyjoys were plenty aggressive against me. And then so was House Tyrell coming up from the south. And that was just – I mean, I was just sandwiched in the middle. I you guys noticed I was just – I went crazy aggressive at the very beginning, and then I just stretched myself way too thin and had to dial it back. Because if I didn't, I would have, my home castle would have fallen probably.
Well, that's the beauty of that game, is it tempts you to stretch your forces too thin.
Yes, and a Lannister always pays his debt, so next game. Brian, anything else?
That was about it for me, actually. Grumpy Cat and Black Friday Gaming.
All right. Chris, what about you?
Let's see here. My brother promised me that he wasn't going to check this podcast so I could actually talk about the Christmas gifts I was going to give him. So tying that back to our last episode, I'm going to give him Sushi Go, which is a cute little card game.
Oh, I love Sushi Go.
Other than I'm working on a project. I got an offer from an indie publisher to do a 10,000-word story, so I'm kind of working on that and not getting into my stuff as much. Though I did catch up a little bit with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I don't know if our fans have caught up with S.H.I.E.L.D. or not, but it is a completely different show than it was first season, especially early first season. Kim, you told me that you just completely gave up on it after episode 5, which I don't blame you.
Yeah, I was going to say thank God, because they just totally drove me away, and I wanted so much to like that show, and it was just – I just thought it was terrible. After our conversation the other day, I'm definitely going to give it another chance.
I didn't even make it to 5 originally. It was pretty horrendous.
Yeah.
I would start with Tracks. That might even still be a little early, but definitely, after the show where it tied into the Winter Soldier movie, and then Hydra is now in charge, that completely flip-flopped the show's whole aesthetic, because instead of being kind of this monster of the week, and they've got all the toys, and they're kicking ass and not really challenged, now they're the underdogs. And the fallout of all that really screwed some people up. I mean, physically and mentally. And now they're doing the long tail, so to speak, or the long lead-in to a couple of the movies from Marvel in the future. You know, they're advancing plot lines that were just kind of like, why did you even mention that at the beginning of the series, the whole thing about Skye being an orphan, she doesn't know who her parents are. Now we know who her parents are, and it's got an awesome actor to do it, and they're doing some crazy stuff. So I'm looking forward to a future Geeky Weekly that you guys tell me you've seen a couple episodes, and hopefully you have or have not changed your minds. I'm looking forward to this next episode that has Patton Oswalt on it, because there's some interesting things with his character. We're wondering whether or not he's even human, to believe it or not.
Well, it's definitely on my short list of things to check out, hopefully when I have some time over the upcoming holidays. And I love Patton Oswalt, so that's, even more of an incentive.
Let's just say that he has a lot of brothers that look just like him. That's all okay. I'm going to say.
A little teaser. That's always good.
Exactly. Okay, so beyond the rematch, Cam, I heard that you got some other Game of Thrones news, especially since you're such a big fan.
Yeah, I guess just to start off my weekly roundup, aside from playing with you guys on Friday night, which I really enjoyed because, our typical Thursday night gaming session at Adventure Game Store was canceled because of the Thanksgiving holiday, obviously. And we sort of did the impromptu Friday night thing, had a great time. And I don't know if any of you saw this over the last few days, but the new Game of Thrones video game is going to be available for download soon. Telltale Games, who is a really great game maker, just came out with a teaser trailer that looks pretty amazing, actually, and from everything I've seen on the web, it looks like it's going to be a pretty great game. Typically, when they try to adapt books, shows, movies into video games, they turn out pretty awful. As you guys well know, this one seems great because they're not trying to recreate the TV show or the books. They're actually taking a sort of a very minor house, the Forresters, who is only touched on minorly in the books. And I don't even know if they were touched on in the TV shows. And you have to navigate politics and intrigue and backstabbing and violence of Westeros as a very minor house. It's also interesting, too, because it starts right in between the third season and the fourth season of the TV series. It basically starts off with the Red Wedding and how then the family, the Forrester house, then reacts to that and, you know, moves forward trying to make their own way in Westeros. They're from the north. They're a northern house. They own and control a forest, obviously being named the Forresters. That is very vital to Westeros because it produces a very strong wood that's used to produce boats and shields and other important implements of war and transportation. So they're pretty pivotal in terms of the things that they produce, but they're minor in terms of their influence, and you've got to sort of try to build them up. It's the very first installment. I believe there's going to be six total, and it's called Game of Thrones. The story begins, Iron from Ice. So look for that for download pretty soon. It's something I'm definitely going to download.
Yeah, and I heard for the video game, actually, you're not even going to play just one character. You're going to play several different Forresters in different parts of Westeros. Is that right?
Absolutely, and that's a really interesting mechanic that I'm really looking forward to. I think you play several characters, and they're all interactive. So you've got to balance what you're doing with one character with your other characters, so you could be doing something that's going to have dire consequences for your other characters. So you really need to sort of keep everything together in your head as you move forward. And just as an aside, I don't know if you guys remember the Choose Your Own Adventure books back in the day. Those were one of my favorite books growing up as a kid. And this sort of has that feel to it. You know, what you choose with one character has ramifications for other characters and leads you to different parts of the story, or you can make other choices. It's not like a lot of the traditional campaigns where, yeah, you have one or two options, but really there's not a lot of branching off. This seems like there's a ton of branches that you can explore, which I'm really looking forward to.
What system? I don't think you said.
The game is going to be available for download this week on PC and consoles. And then it will be out for iOS at some point shortly thereafter. And I'm really looking forward to playing that game.
I appreciate it being unveiled so quickly, I guess, or available so quickly after being unveiled, because I'm so sick and tired of waiting 2 years for games or movies.
Couldn't agree more. Other than that, my week was pretty tame. Did a lot of Cyber Monday shopping, like we talked about last week. Did a lot of Small Business Saturday shopping. Basically hung out with you guys Friday and then hung out again Sunday night at the Falcon Pub. Played some really great games Sunday night. We played Escape from Atlantis. We played Biblios again, which actually I just found out today is coming out with a Kickstarter version called Biblios Dice, which is a new version of the game, which seems to be the trend these days. Pandemic just came out with a dice game, and there are a lot of other big titles are rushing to follow that trend. So I'm interested to see how that's going to go.
I'm very curious about Biblios Dice as a Kickstarter project not being Aiello. I know, it's yellow.
No, you know, it's not yellow, but if you look back at Biblios, the original game that was out back in 2007, there were actually several different publishers. The actual designer and artist is a guy by the name of Dr. Steve Finn, who some gamers may or not know. He's made a ton of games, and there were several different publishers over the years of Biblios. I think the most recent is Aiello. This iteration of Biblios in dice form, I believe, is a function of just the crowdfunding phenomenon and him wanting to do it on his own. I mean, why would he give it to a publisher when he can do it on his own and reap, you know, the lion's share of the profits? The Kickstarter is 2014. It will be out in 2015. Obviously, back in 2007, when he created Biblios, Kickstarter and crowdfunding was just in its infancy, and it wasn't a viable option at the time. So it'll be interesting to see how the production value differs, how the logistics go in terms of him producing the game and getting it out to people rather than going through a large publishing house. And also interesting to see if, you know, how the game plays, because typically those publishers those larger publishers insist on a lot of testing before it comes out. So we'll see how it goes.
I too love Biblios, so I'm watching this one excitedly.
Yeah, I believe the Kickstarter campaign just debuted this week. They're shooting for a 2015 release date. And just as a little teaser, I've communicated with Dr. Finn, and he might be someone that would be gracing the show in a future episode.
Awesome. Fantastic.
That's been my week.
Since we're getting into teasers and upcoming news, let's switch over to our new segment, the news extravaganza.
Not so much a newsy bit, but a gadgety bit. I know the answer to this, but pretend. How do you guys prefer to select who goes first in a game?
I'd like to look at the rules and see if they have a certain rule for it. If not, well, then you just grab some dice.
Yeah, I've always got a D20 on me, so that's usually my go-to move.
That topic came up recently in a forum I was reading, and this one guy just came in and he's like, what, you guys don't use Chaozy? There's a totally free app for Android. I'm sure it's available for iPhone also, but I don't care. It's a little app. You set it for either teams or first player or, you know, whatever. And then everyone puts their finger on your screen and it picks someone.
Wow, that sounds pretty cool.
I like it. I've been playing with it for a while now, like testing it. Does it work like this? And apparently I can fit 9 of my fingers on my phone, but not 10.
It's not one at a time, but everybody puts their fingers on your phone at the same time?
Yeah, it's like however many players, like, you know, 10 players put their fingers down and everybody gets their own little color. And then that person's color will take over the screen. Like, it grows from the winner.
Yeah, that sounds really interesting. We might have to try that.
It's certainly flatter than a D10.
Yeah, and less chance of it to fly off the table, right?
Well, that just, I guess, depends on your phone, right? At least you don't want your phone to be flying off the table.
Very true.
Well, I guess the newsy item I bumped into was there is an article where they were trying to say that certain medieval libraries had developed a crude system that would be on par with like how we use GPS these days to find books. And as I'm looking into it, I mean, it's an indexing system that has some visual cues to help you find where you're kind of wanting to go. But you know what? In the end, I was kind of, you know what? That was a stretch.
Did not see it, but yeah, it sounds like a leap to me.
It was. I mean, they had like, oh, it's got like something on the left column and something on the right column, which corresponds, and basically kind of a handheld book, which I guess being handheld book versus a huge ass thing written by a monk was kind of cutting edge item back in the Middle Ages. But yeah, I felt like after reading it that it was more, it kind of clickbaited me, you know?
Absolutely.
So Cam, what else is on your geeky radar?
A couple things, actually. Tabletop, the Will Wheaton show debuted this week. Season 3, Episode 1, where they tackled Tokaido, one of my favorite games. We haven't played that in a while, guys, but it's a great game, and the episode was okay. The other thing that I thought was really cool is that Apple just applied for a bunch of patents this week, and one of the patents is, I mean, if it comes to fruition, it's absolutely amazing. Basically uses all of the sensors on every Apple device, whether it be an iPhone, iPad, you know, whatever you have, to reorient itself when you drop it. So say you're walking along with your iPad, you trip or something, or slips out of your hand and you drop it. In real time, it calculates the wind speed and, you know, all of the different variables going on around it, and it orients itself to try to fall in the least damaging way, so that you won't crack your screen. If it does fall, maybe it falls on a corner or something, rather than actually breaking a vital part of the device. That's some pretty futuristic shit. And if they can put that together, I think that would be, I can't imagine, you know, how much of a boon that would be to people's lives, because I know I'm constantly dropping my phone.
Well, don't you have like that military grade casing?
Yeah, well, that's the reason why I bought that shit, because you guys saw my old iPhone. I mean, that thing looked like I threw it in a blender for 20 minutes because I was constantly dropping it. But this thing, so far so good on my new with my new phone and my new case. But I mean, hey, you know, any little bit of help is much appreciated.
Okay, that's very cool.
I want to be the one to make the first iCat joke.
Okay. Okay. So you want me to throw it over to you?
No. That was my joke.
Oh.
Don't you mean your iCat meme?
Well, I haven't made a meme yet.
So that's it for me on the news front.
For my news bit, I found out that the Google phone is going to be a real thing next year. Q1 in 2015.
Early Q1 or late Q1?
Well, it was supposed to be like late this year, and they're saying January this year, and who knows? So I guess that's what they're shooting for, but it'll probably end up being late, especially since it is such a radical thing. I don't know if you guys have heard of it or not, but it's a modular phone.
Does it always land on its feet? That's all I care about now.
I've definitely seen it in the news. I mean, I'm not usually a first-gen adapter, so I'll probably wait to see how it goes. And you know.
Well, I wouldn't jump on it anyway from what I read. Right now, it's not even going to be a real phone. It only has Wi-Fi. It doesn't have a SIM card module yet. So at this point, I'm looking at them as really cheap tablets.
Brian, anything else?
One more thing, back to Kickstarter. Have you guys looked at Rum and Bones yet?
I have not. Is it on? It's on Kickstarter?
Launched today. It's a Cool Mini or Not project, which I know some people hate, but they've done better than anybody else. I mean, it is the first tabletop MOBA, which I think could be pretty exciting.
Wouldn't that be just a skirmish game on a board?
Kinda, sorta, yes, but it's designed to be played quickly. It's not a miniatures game exactly. The pieces have rules and have movement, but it's much, much quicker and simpler than your normal minis game. And there are not really any like, oh, I killed you all rules. It's resource control. The point of the game is your pirates raiding each other's ship, so the person who hauls off the most loot wins. There's two lanes, just like a MOBA. It looks really interesting.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. The art looks pretty amazing. The miniatures look pretty cool.
Look at the Kickstarter exclusives. I love them, actually.
Oh, wow.
All I have to say is, I know you said it's not a skirmish game, but when there it says it has 70 highly detailed 32-millimeter plastic miniatures, I pause for a moment.
It's an interesting hybrid. I can see why you're going down that route, but just their focus on MOBA playstyle, I think, really sets it apart. I think this is going to be maybe the first skirmish style, but like really dedicated to a Dota feel or a League of Legends feel.
Yeah, just scrolling through it, it looks awesome. I mean, they've already almost unlocked all of the stretch goals, and it's... campaign just started. They smashed their pledge goal.
Funded in 34 minutes.
Wow.
550 backers for the lowest version that gives you the core game. It's 550 backers, all gone, sold out.
Well, the next level's only $10 more, but I mean, that's the only level. There's only two levels. It's $90 or $100, and $90s are all gone. So wow.
That could be a lot of fun. I think that's more of a Star Wars X-Wing than a War Machine Warhammer. And I kind of think that's what a lot of people need, you know, to get the new blood in, something approachable. If I'm not mistaken, these aren't even really miniatures. They're just plastic figures that, yeah, you can paint, but there's no assembly required. They look kind of killer just to begin with.
Yeah, they look awesome. That Ahab the Vengeful, I think, is my favorite so far.
Well, you know, the whole having to assemble your miniatures as part of, like, painting them and all that, that depends mostly on the people designing those miniatures in the games. I think, like, the Hobbit War game, part of the allure for that one was a lot of those figures were one piece. You popped them off the sprue and you could paint them. You didn't have to stick on an arm here or a shield there or have something, a monster that took 13 pieces to assemble.
Well, certainly those types of minis that you assemble yourself and paint yourself, that appeals to a totally different demographic than, you know, a just Euro gamer or straight up, you know, even a miniature gamer, because that's a art in and of itself. I mean, you've got to have a lot of patience to do that stuff, and you're buying those kind of games partly because you want to put the minis together, I would think.
No, I hear where you're coming from, but there's a whole long history of crossover games that, is it a war game? Is it a board game? And where does it fall in that? And do you paint the figures or not? That goes all the way back to like Car Wars and Battletech and like Dust Tactics and stuff being one of the more recent stuff.
This might be an interesting first hit for a lot of people. Kind of excited about that.
We'll cross our fingers.
Speaking of first hits, I think, Cam, you had one more thing some people may possibly have heard about.
Yeah, it's just a little tiny news story that I doubt many people have seen this week. this little franchise called Star Wars came out with a new trailer for episode 7. And I don't know about you guys, but I glanced at it once or twice or 20 times. What did you guys think about it?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm watching it right now. What'd you say?
Obviously. Yeah, absolutely. Brian, what'd you think?
I think I'm in the middle of everything. I don't think the movie's going to be the next coming, and I don't think it's going to be horrible. And this kind of did everything it could to reinforce exactly how I felt. It's going to be good. I'm going to enjoy it, but I just don't think it's going to feel like a Star Wars. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. In contrast to that, the trailer, I think, definitely made me feel like it was going to feel like Star Wars. Basically, it hit me with everything I sort of was looking for. I just thought it was great.
Well, for me, it also like made a really great impression. It got me excited. But, you know, taking a breath, I really am now back in kind of the, you know, burn to me once, shame on me, burn me twice, shame on you sort of thing. I want to wait until I actually see the movie before I let myself get really overly excited about it.
I was very down on episode 1 before it came out. Ever since I saw that, I think it was 2020, with George Lucas pulling the heads off of one alien and putting it on the other just willy-nilly. And you could actually kind of see the animator like, no. Why would the fish have a lion's tail? That doesn't make any... What do you mean big floppy ears? No. It really bothered me, and I kind of saw that as the love and care the main guy was putting into it. I don't feel that way this time. I'm not doom and gloom on it, but I don't know. Like, I did not get that little lump in my throat watching. And even when the Falcon popped up on screen, like, I was just like, that doesn't really look like, you know, a 40-year-old Falcon. It looked like a little too crisp, a little too clean.
Well, it was flying around at Mach 3, so it was a little hard to see the dings and the dents there, I assume.
It was very bright, wasn't it?
Well, you never know. Han may have come into some money and taken it to the Galactic Detail Shop.
Well, I know for me, when I first saw the first trilogy, I was working for a newspaper back then, and I landed the job where I get to do the movie review for it. At this point, you know, I see the first trilogy as sort of the beginning of my childhood, so to speak. Of when, you know, kind of the world opened up to a huger level of imagination. People say the golden age of science fiction is the 1950s. Other people say the golden age of science fiction is when you're 12 years old. And, you know, your mind just kind of, wow, shit is awesome. Wow, I got to share it with everybody. And then I saw the second trilogy as like the beginning of adult regret, sort of maturity creeping into my, you know, 30-year-old self, because it didn't have any magic for me. So this is why I'm kind of like sitting on the fence wondering how this one is going to make me feel when I see it.
It may be unfair of me to expect any movie to give me that childhood feeling again, but I don't know. The original movies still do. Is that pure nostalgia?
Yeah, you both bring up an interesting point. I think that's where a lot of the cynicism from the trolls and the fanboys on the internet comes from. You know, we're all searching for that magical feeling, and I think that just as a function of age, you know, that's never going to come back. And Brian, to your point, yeah, I think you do identify with those feelings when you watch the original movies, because that's actually how you felt, whereas you had never had a feeling for any of the newer movies until you first saw them. And it certainly wasn't the feeling that you got when you were a kid. So it brings up probably, you know, a lot worse feelings than if it was a standalone series rather than sort of an extension of that original series.
I don't think anything will make me feel the way 1, 2, and 3 did. So at least we're light years from that.
Okay, I'm confused. When you say 1, 2, and 3, do you mean the original trilogy or do you mean episodes 1, 2, and 3?
Episodes 1, 2, and 3.
So you liked those better than 4, 5, and 6?
No, I meant negatively.
Oh, okay.
And Brian, you know, I think that, and I'm hoping that Disney and everyone involved in these new movies is seeing that. And I think they may be, because if you look at it, I think what might do it for me personally, and I can't speak for anyone else, is sort of a wrap up. And that's why I'm really glad that they got all of the original cast together, to sort of tie off all the loose ends and then start fresh with the new leads that they have. You know, I'm really interested to see what the story is going to be whether it's going to be totally focused on the old cast and trying to bring back the feelings of the past, or trying to relive, episodes 4, 5, and 6, or is it sort of a goodbye to the to Han and Luke and Leia and all of them, and then incorporate the new cast into something brand new that then can inspire a new generation?
Well, I know for me, it kind of the irony of it is, for the longest time, George Lucas was going on about how he was going to go on with like 3 sets of trilogies, and that there was going to be one trilogy that followed Return of the Jedi, which was originally Revenge of the Jedi. And then as it came closer to getting the prequels done, he said, oh, no, I never had any. And it had been documented a dozen times. He said that was just a rumor. That wasn't a thing. So the irony is now Disney is fulfilling a dream, a vision, a promise that he reneged on later.
I do remember even when I was young hearing, I mean, I don't think he ever said it to me, but I do remember hearing that it was always intended to be 3 trilogies. And I think he probably went back on that so that they could do, no, it's not 3 trilogies, it's 2 trilogies and 4,000 subfilms.
Yeah, and now what does he care, right? I mean, unless there's a profit share in his deal with Disney.
Oh, yes, there has to be. Unless that was the deal breaker for him, that if he had a profit share, he had input. Because I think at this point, he has completely divorced himself of any input, and they've only hired him on as a consultant.
Yeah, I don't know how much active input he has on the actual new storyline, but I'm sure they have to go to him for, you know, all the canon stuff.
No, they don't.
Yeah, they have their own council of canon now, right?
Oh, wow.
One of them was the person who ran, like, the biggest fan site, Wookiepedia.
Wait. Is that how the animated series got folded into canon?
I think for convenience sake, they said Clone Wars was considered canon because it was the closest thing that kind of happened. And then everything else in the extended universe is up for grabs for inspiration, but they are not beholden to anything. That's the kind of the press release they put out on that.
For the most part, it's anything on film, television series, and the actual films. By the way, I'm not letting anyone forget this. That god-awful film with Capote the Hutt is canon.
Oh, I'm sure that's something everyone would like to forget.
In addition to the Christmas special?
I believe Christmas special is canon. I mean, I know it wasn't well received, but I don't think anything, you know, too amazing happened in it. Not like Boba Fett and Leia made out or anything.
I'm willing to bet that that is so non-canon, it doesn't even retroactively exist anymore, but we'll see.
What do you guys think of the new leads?
What I think is I'm very, very much into this controversy with the very first shot of the first lead.
Oh, you mean in the stormtrooper uniform?
Yeah, the stormtrooper. Yeah, because obviously he's on a desert planet, right? So he has to be a sand trooper. And yet when he pops up and he turns around, you see that he has got no shoulder pad whatsoever. So, you know, J.J. Abrams has already kind of dropped the ball on the continuity because he's totally forgotten sand troopers. There probably should have been a dewback way in the background there just to kind of further cement that. You know, he's already kind of dropping the ball there.
That's the controversy you think about.
Yeah. Of course. What other controversy is there?
Maybe the fact that he is an African American that many people have been up in arms. An African clone of Boba Fett.
Are you making this up? Seriously, people are up in arms because there's a black stormtrooper.
Oh yeah, the web was ablaze as soon as the trailer hit, and I mean I don't understand it. I mean, you know, it's everyone knew who the leads were going to be, so you know, and I think it's probably an homage back to earlier episodes with the protagonist in a stormtrooper uniform. But the internet was going crazy with people just upset that there was a black stormtrooper, which I don't get.
Excuse me for a moment, guys. That was my head hitting my desk twice over that silliness. Okay, yeah. Maybe that was my fist, but still. Really?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I have to say I am shocked. Like, I think somewhat better about my immediate world because not one person I know saw that and thought, wait a minute, black guy? That's not right. But then I feel so much worse about the world at large because why are we even talking about that?
Yeah, I mean it's just a ridiculous conversation, but I think it's good that we're talking about it just because, you know, in our realm, like you said, Brian, I don't think any one of my immediate friends even picked up on that. except for maybe, I think one person mentioned the fact that, well, hey, weren't all the stormtroopers clones of Jenga Fett? You know, made no mention whatsoever of him being black, but it's pretty crazy that someone would actually go onto the internet and then post, hey, what's going on with the black stormtrooper? That's terrible.
This occurred to me while Chris was talking. It's complete conjecture, but wouldn't it be interesting if he weren't an actual stormtrooper whatsoever, but that was salvaged armor?
Or maybe he was just in disguise.
Well, because even later in the film, the Imperial stormtroopers don't look like that anymore. So if they've been updated, I'd love to see him like a desert scavenger, like raiding battle sites for supplies. And that gives me a little bit of hope for it.
Yeah, don't quote me, but I think in the extended universe, they mentioned that at some point, especially when the Empire is on the ropes, they let anybody come in and put on a suit of armor if they volunteered, including aliens. Because I have to admit, and maybe I was just a little oblivious at the time when I was 12, I didn't even realize that all the bad guys were humans, and white humans at that, as compared to, like, well, of course, most of the Rebel Alliance was mostly humans too. But I mean that, you know, they were basically a Nazi substitute. It didn't really occur to me that, like, the only time you ever saw an alien on the Empire side is that they were a bounty hunter kind of working outside the system.
I'm not sure when I picked that up. I don't think I discovered it myself, but I do remember reading that they were rather supremacist. Human supremacists, though, not white supremacists. So there should still be no argument about a black guy. That's just silly.
Totally silly.
Well, yes, I agree.
There is no EU. If I can't talk about how cool the books were, you can't talk about the Yurzon invasion causing the Empire to slacken their alien rules.
Believe it or not, I have not read much EU. That was just some stuff I was picking up back and forth on the internet. Good God, I'd never had enough time to read all those books.
It's funny to me that fans of Star Wars can be totally fine with different aliens and planets and things like that, but then a human of a different color causes this much controversy. It's just pretty... seems out of whack to me.
They're okay with green. I mean, no one's upset about Greedo.
Or Orion Space Woman, but that's another franchise.
Yes, very much so. I'm going to go back to an earlier statement. I'm going to bet right now that him being in the Stormtrooper uniform is an homage back to Han and Luke when they rescued Leia. Because, I mean, what else could it be? I'm just dying to know, but I guess that's what the trailer was meant to do.
I like that theory. That's very good.
I agree. Well, you know, if you watch the trailer again, you'll see that when they're doing kind of like the stormtroopers coming in hot on D-Day or whatever it is, that one of the stormtroopers seems a couple inches shorter than the others.
you've caught a lot more than I did, that's for sure, Chris. I will say, though, sort of back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the episode with the Game of Thrones video game, it really irks me that we have to wait now until December or whatever it is of 2015 to see the movie. I mean, this thing has just got me so jazzed to see it, and now it's like, hurry up and wait.
I think their secret plan is halfway through, they'll start a Kickstarter.
just to get them over the last hump. I'm pretty sure Disney's funded well enough to get the movie made.
I didn't say they weren't funded. I just said they'd still start a Kickstarter.
True, and you never know after the John Carter fiasco. Maybe they're hurting a little in the pocket.
Oh, guys, that is an episode for a whole other time.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a great book you should read, John Carter and the Gods of Hollywood, that gets into that whole cluster.
Yeah, if you got that book, Chris, I'd love to borrow it sometime.
It's any book. Oops.
What else do we want to go into about this, guys?
I am a huge ship dork because of the X-Wing game. Those probably aren't X-Wings. Were you guys aware of that?
In the trailer?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that got past me as well. you guys clearly watched this a lot more closer than I did.
Well, some of the continuity gurus I bumped into on the internet said that... even if they were X-Wings, they should have had their wings closed for atmospheric flight, which was a new one on me.
Their S-foils were locked in attack position, weren't they?
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited about that. I'm really excited. Not so much the silly droid, but I'm excited to see new ships. And I was a little bit disappointed that TIEs are still TIEs. I kind of wanted them upgraded a little bit.
But, you know, the thing about TIEs, and I think it was something you even got the impression of in the movies, were basically that TIEs were highly expendable. They were like the cannon fodder of starships.
God, it just bothers me not being able to talk about EU so much because the Empire got away from that because it worked so poorly for them. Even the TIE Advance that Vader flew and later on the TIE Interceptors, they went towards a more let's nurture ace pilots and have actual comparisons to X-Wings instead of needing to build three ships to every X-Wing.
Well, I know for the X-Wing game, that works out pretty well because then you have the small group of rebels that are pretty hardy, and then you have these little X-Wings that are very, very maneuverable, but they're pretty much glass cannons. They'll work well in a swarm, but then, you know, once an X-Wing actually can get a bead and hit something, it goes down in a ball of flame.
But most of that was actually from the books and everything. I mean, there were, 10 Rogue Squadron books, and how many comic books all about that. It was well established, but I don't even know if you can count on it anymore. Maybe ties are just ties.
I'm sure Timothy Zahn greatly appreciates your patronage.
Let me ask you guys. I've seen several, like, I've read a bunch of reviews of, and a bunch of things on the trailer. Like, 5 of them refer to that little droid as being R2-D2.
No, that cannot be.
Yeah, I mean, you know, where the hell, where they got that, I don't know.
I think it's an R2 unit, but I don't think it, you know, it's not R2-D2. And on top of that, people don't even know whether or not that head is magically floating above thanks to anti-gravity Wahoo,
right,
or whether there's like a shaft that goes like into the middle of the ball, and the ball is just like this big kind of yo-yo construct that rolls around on.
Yeah, I mean, did R2 get an upgrade, or is this just a new droid? I mean, why would they... My question is, why would they fixture him so prominently in the trailer if it was just a little minor little droid?
Oh, he's the cute. He's the cutesy thing.
Oh, he's going to be the
he's the cutesy comic sidekick. I'm still amused how Stairs are still its villain.
He's the new Jar Jar.
I take that back. Going upstairs is still its arch nemesis. Going downstairs, actually, this time should work.
Well, he might have rocket packs like R2 did. Who knows? Especially if he is R2. Oh, that worries me. Hopefully that's just ignorance on reviewers.
Yeah, I mean, not just one. If it was just one, I would have just been like, oh, this guy's just an idiot, you know? But, I mean, several reviewers have said that.
Yeah, I think it's an R2 series droid, but it's definitely not R2-D2.
I hope so.
It's the wrong color, even.
Yeah, it's like orange and something. What did you guys think about the Falcon?
Looks like they got that radar dish they lost replaced.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said maybe Han got a little upgrade.
Yeah, because the original round one fell off while Lando was piloting out of the Death Star. And the new one looks like it's a flat rectangular one. I've got good eyes.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
See, I don't know. Talking about it makes me feel worse about it. It really does. God, if that's R2 and that's a pretty Falcon just because they can do it with graphics now, and oh boy.
Just a random question though, Brian, would you have a problem if, say, Han was now like a big shot, or, you know, some kind of, like, I don't know, like tycoon or something, and he had the Falcon upgraded or had it fixed up?
As long as there's like a really great reason. It's just so weird what I think I know about Han. Like, he would never have a flashy ship. You know, it was always barely cobbled together. I can't even see success getting to him so that he'd change. Unless that's the story, you know, maybe he's a senator of a planet now or something like that and has to put up appearances being married to Leia.
Yes, yeah, I sort of maybe felt a little bit of the opposite. I mean, it was cobbled together because it was just a function of him being, you know, a smuggler and a gambler and all, you know, all that's and owing the Hutts money, and he couldn't afford to do it at the time, but you know, he had a really big, flashy personality, so he seemed like the kind of guy that once he got into a position of prominence and money, I don't see him going out and buying one of the episode 1, 2, or 3, you know, those all silver ships or anything like that.
The but, chrome, you know, vets.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, sticking with the Falcon, but just making her a little more pretty, you know?
Well, it's obvious they didn't go with Patton Oswalt's suggested script changes.
Even though I do like Patton Oswalt.
You guys heard about that one where he had the whole filibuster thing, right?
I saw it on Twitter, something about it on Twitter, but I didn't didn't go too much into it.
It was for a Park and Rec episode, and they said, improv whatever you want. And he was supposed to filibuster at a podium. And his filibuster on the podium was this whole, seems like 20 minutes, it probably was only 5, but hilarious rant of what his suggestion was for the new script for Star Wars. And it starts to get even more ridiculous as you go on. And he eventually gets the tie-in, since Disney owns them now, Marvel and the mutants and everybody in the same movie.
I'm going to have to look that up.
Thanos versus Darth Vader at the end sort of thing.
Awesome. I'm going to have to look that up.
So, guys, any final thoughts on the trailer?
I may not have been thrilled with the trailer, but let's be honest. We're all going to go see the movie. There is no chance I will not see that movie at least three times in the theater.
Same here.
I don't know about three times, but I'm definitely going to see it in the theater where it deserves to be seen and, you know, big screen with gorgeous sound. I might even break down and do, like, the IMAX version because I'm crossing my fingers that J.J. Abrams would do the 3D right. I don't know, about three times, but definitely in the theater. It's definitely something I'm not going to say, I'll catch it on Netflix later.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to go see it wherever I can see it the soonest. So if it's a regular theater, that's fine. But then I will definitely see it in IMAX and 3D afterwards, I'm sure, once the initial fervor wears off.
All right, guys. Well, that sounds like a date. Wait, that didn't come out right.
Yeah, that was a little creepy.
I don't think I'll be standing in line again. I did that for one. It did not pay off in any way, shape, or form. One of you guys can pick me up a ticket.
Yeah, no, I absolutely will not be standing in line either. That's why I said I'll go to wherever I can see it without having to stand in line when it comes out. But I'm not going to do the whole camp out thing again.
I'll never forget it. I had to get my number in line from Grand Moff Eric, who'd been there for like a week already.
Wow.
You know what? I refuse to stand in line for 5 hours for Boba Fett's autograph. I think I'm going to skip the line on this one.
Well, that about wraps up this week's episode. Luckily, all of you listening in a galaxy far, far away won't have to wait as long for next week's episode as we will have to wait for the next Star Wars episode. And over the course of this next week, before episode 133 airs, you can check out our website, nerdstravaganza.com, to check out this and all of our previous episodes. And if you'd like to email us, you can reach us at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus want us on Google+. And if you really want all the insider interactivity, join the Nerdstravaganza HQ Facebook group.
And don't forget to also subscribe and rate us on iTunes, or you can stream us on Stitcher. And that's been episode 132 of the Nerdstravaganza. We appreciate you guys, every one of you fans listening every week, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Let me try again. Let me lower my pitch anyway, because that was a little too high for me. All right. Well, you know, it happens. I'm relaxed and my phone, I sound like I'm Batman and then, or Orson Welles. And then when I get excited, I sound like I'm Mickey Mouse. It kind of pisses me off.